iniquity shall abound because the love of many shall wax cold and many false prophets shall rise and deceive many.
That woman was deceived. She's deceived by the devil. She never saw his glory, never saw his coming, and never saw the treading, and knew nothing about the truth. Now, she's probably a Christian when the largest church is up there, professing Christian. What does it say in one of the verses? In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea. Now, you know better than that. Now, you know better than that. In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea. Well, I'll get back in this text in a minute. But did you know that some king or some princes or some princesses or some Caesar, they might have had a little boy that had a bed of lilies to lie in. They say, well, it's no bed of lilies or no bed of roses. And they say, well, this baby might have been born a bed of lilies or a bed of roses with perfume and hangings all around nurses and attendants. But listen, my Savior wasn't born there. He was born in a stable. And his bed was straw, and he was born with barnyard animals. Hence, close the door. Were you raised in a barn? Well, my Savior was raised in a barn. And so she said, in the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea with the glory in his bosom. Why, he was the glory. It wasn't in his bosom. He was the glory of God manifest in the face of Jesus Christ. The Word was made flesh, and John said, we've seen it, and we've touched it. It wasn't in his bosom. There wasn't something in Christ that makes you a good person. Jesus Christ is the good person. It isn't something in him. Anyway, with the glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me, as died to make men holy, he didn't anything of the kind. Paul said, this is a faithful saying worth of all acceptation, that Jesus Christ came in the world to save sinners, of whom I am chief. Let us die to make men free. You couldn't free nobody. Does anybody in this building and free anybody? Just let's see you free anybody. Christ said, he that commits sin is the servant of sin. If the Son shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. Bunch of fellas marched around singing that thing like they thought they're singing a Christian hymn. Well, that's the biggest piece of pagan tripe you ever picked up from the Greek school of Athens. In the beauty of the Lord, Christ was born across the sea with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me as he died to make men holy. Let us die to make men free. Well, you can't free anybody. John Knox was a galley slave, and he had the chains on his hand, the chains on his feet, and he was a born-again man. And John Knox, as a galley slave, sitting there at that galley with those chains on him, was a freer man than Frank Sinatra with an income of $2 million a year. The Bible said, he that commits sin is a servant of sin. If the Son shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. You can't free anybody. Well, let's go on. Back at free. I was going to say this. Have you ever noticed when they start talking about freeing folks or liberating folks, have you ever noticed they always chain them? Have you ever noticed that? If you're going to liberate Hungary, what do? You take it. If you're going to liberate Cuba, what do? Take it over. If you're going to liberate Mississippi or liberate Alabama, you're going to take them over. You understand that, don't you? Whenever somebody says, now, we're going to set you free, boy, we're going to give you equal rights, we're going to give you civil rights, we're going to turn you loose, we're going to give you all the rights, you know what they're going to do? They're going to put a ball and chain on you. They're going to put a ball and chain on you every time. All right, we're working on the root of the advent of Jesus Christ, not on geopolitics. All right, Habakkuk 3, verse 1. A prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet, upon Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard thy speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman. Teman's the name of one of Esau's boys. He's Duke Teman in Genesis, and he settles in Edom. And the Temanites come from him. God came from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran. Mount Paran is a mountain in Edom. Selah. There's the city. His glory covered the heavens. There's the shine forth. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. And his brightness, there's shine forth. And his brightness was as the light. He had horns coming out of his hand. There was the height of his power. Before him went the pestilence, the dabar, the word. And burning coals went forth at his feet. And here he comes, verse 8. Here come the chariots of salvation. And here comes the deep. Opening up for him to come down, verse 10. And there goes the sun and moon like Joshua, conking out, verse 11. And verse 12, thou didst march through the land in indignation, thou didst thresh the heathen in anger, thou wentest forth for the salvation of thy people, even for salvation with thine anointed, thou woundest the head, there's Genesis 3:15, out of the house of the wicked by discovering the foundation under the neck, and here you come, you're in verse 15. Thou didst walk through the sea with thine corsairs, through the heap of great waters. And boy, that's a heap of water. That's a heap of water. That's the deep back in verse 12. That's that body of water that makes the solar system look like a puddle. All right, Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14, verse 4, or verse 3, or verse 1. We'll start at 1. Zechariah 14, 1. Zechariah 14, 1. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. For I have gathered all nations against Jerusalem. Lord says, he'll gather all nations, united nations. Lord, get them together. I will gather all nations. You know what the Lord told Matthew in Matthew 13? He said, write. Matthew said, what am I going to write? And the Lord said, when you write for that fellow to go out there and gather the tares in bundles first to burn them, and then gather my wheat into my barn. So before the wheat goes up in the granary, the good seed, then the tares will be gathered together, and they're going to be gathered together to be burned, and they're being gathered right now. You know what that shows you? That shows it isn't long before the wheat goes into the barn. All right, Zechariah 14, 1. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and my spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, the houses rifled. That's hence a rifling in a barrel is a drilling out this way. It differs from a gun, and the gun has no rifling. The rifling is the drilling out, fire on the barrel. And the houses rifled, we say reamed is the same word, reamed out. Rifled, and the women ravished, that's raped. And half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. They're going to be left in there, Isaiah 6. Then shall the Lord go forth, second advent, and fight. The Lord is a man of war in the book of Exodus. He's a man of war in Revelation 19. Then shall he go forth and fight against those nations. One time Jesus was up before Pontius Pilate, and Pontius Pilate was talking to him about his kingdom. And Jesus says to Pontius Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom, not from hence, not from this world, now. But if there's any doubt in your mind as to whether his kingdom's going to be, Zechariah 14:3, then the Lord shall go forth and fight. See that thing? Against those nations, as when he fought in the day of battle. In plain words, people that don't believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ to set up a literal, political kingdom with armed force are people who have rejected nearly three-quarters of the Bible. Christ's first coming was a coming to die on the cross for sinners, shed blood for sinners, make an atonement for sinners, die and come up from the dead. And what the world has done is spiritualize all that business and then just act like, now we got a hold of it, we're just going to go on and on and on and on. We blow ourselves to kingdom come, or can we bring in perfect conditions? That one of these days, pretty soon, after Christians are caught out at the rapture, the Lord's going to return to this earth, and when he comes back to this earth, he'll come down to the galaxies, solar systems, nebula, star clusters, and when he comes down, he'll come down from the north. When he comes down, he'll come down across the side of the earth to Sinai. He'll come down at Sinai in the air and move across Sinai, and on a map, it'll begin here, and he'll come up from Sinai, up through Edom, up through Seir, up through Paran, up the King's Highway, east side of the Dead Sea, turn at the north end of the Dead Sea, and cross at the place where he was baptized, come across to Gilgal, across to Jericho, come across the Mount of Olives, land the Mount of Olives, step off that white Arabian steed that travels about 120,000 light years per second, puts his foot in the ground, the mountain splits right in two. Christ said, if you have faith of the grain of mustard seed, you shall tell this mountain to be removed and cast into the sea, and it shall be done. So he puts that foot down, mountain breaks off, then he gets back on that steed and comes down and comes through the eastern gate that's cemented shut that Kaiser Wilhelm tried to get through and couldn't get through, and Hitler and Rommel were working on when she blew up. And he'll come down to that eastern gate and come into Jerusalem and go in the temple and sit down in the Holy of Holies and put one arm on one cherub and one arm on the other, just like the devil did 3.5 years before. And, brother, then it's going to be bowed down or else. All right, we'll close there.
I'm free. First, Song of Solomon 3. Song of Solomon 3. Song of Solomon 3, verse 8. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man his sword upon his thigh, because of fear in the night. And the context, verse 6, is somebody coming from the wilderness. Verse 7, it's Solomon's. And the Israelites with this army. 7, 70 valiant men are about of the valiant of Israel. That's 60. I don't know why I said 60, it's always 70 or 12. And then they hold swords, being expert in war, every man's sword upon his thigh, because of fear in the night. And the context is tribulation, and the context is an army coming up through the wilderness with swords, like you find at the Second Advent. Verse 9, King Solomon made himself a chariot of the wood of Lebanon. He made the pillars thereof of silver, the bottom thereof of gold, the covering of it of purple, the midst thereof paved with love for the daughters of Jerusalem. And it's hard to get it. You can't do much with it. It's some chariot. It's a chariot with a floor. It has pillars. It's a chariot with a canopy on it. It's some kind of a chariot with a uprights in it that hold a canopy over the top. And the bottom is gold. Got a gold chariot. Now, boy, you talk about a gold Cadillac. There's a gold chariot. And the covering of it, purple. That's royal color. The drapery is purple. The midst thereof being paved for the daughters of Jerusalem, and then inserted, paved with love for the daughters of Jerusalem. I don't know where we're at. I'm through in there. I'm out. Got a pavement in the middle of it. Bible says about that feast of Esther that the king's garden or his palace was paved with marble and stone and had a pavement in the middle and then go around the outside. But what that means, I have any idea in the world. And when he says paved with love, you step on love? Paved with love, the love is a pavement. You step on it, I'm out. Y'all get any light in the habit. 11, go forth, ye daughters of Zion, that's Israel, and behold King Solomon, type of Christ, with the crown, that's the king coming, that's the second coming there, wherewith his mother. Well, if it's Christ, he's Mary, but it can't be Mary because Mary didn't crown him, and Mary isn't going to crown him. He's going to say his mother's Israel. He's called the seed of Israel, and he's from David according to flesh. Wherewith his mother, let's make it literally King Solomon. Go forth, ye daughters of Zion, behold King Solomon, the real king, the literal king, with the crown wherewith his mother crowned him, Bathsheba, in the day of his espousal, in the day of when he was engaged. We had 1,000 wives. Did she cry every time they got married? It won't come through. Now I will make it Christ. Go forth, ye daughters of Zion, behold King Solomon, type of Christ, with the crown wherewith his mother, New Jerusalem, or Jerusalem, crowned him in the day of his espousal, when he was engaged to the church, in the day of the gladness of his heart. That'll work. Except still, the mother crowning him looks peculiar. She crowned him when he got engaged to the church. Christ didn't become a king when he got engaged to the church. He became head of the church, head of the body. He won't become king until he comes again. It isn't coming through. Now, I know some of you begin to study. You wonder, well, what are we getting in here? And the answer is, there's a lot of mass to teach Song of Solomon, and I must confess, there's a great deal in Song of Solomon I just don't stand. I mean, I'm just blank on it. You get me over in John or Romans, I know what I'm doing about 90% of the time. And Get me to Genesis, I know what I'm doing about 95% of the time. Get me into Revelation, I know what I'm doing about 80% of the time. Look at Hebrews now, I know what I'm doing about 60% of the time. And here I know what I'm doing about 30% of the time. So I don't know what it is. And you tell me, and I'll be a wiser man than I am. All right, 4. Now this is him talking to her. Verse 1 to 7. Well, let's see. 1, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Everything to 15 is him talking to her. And it'll be type of Christ talking to the church. And in type, it's a practically speaking, it's a man speaking of his wife and telling his love to her. Everything down to verse 15. Then 16 is a change in this paragraph mark at verse 16. All right, 4:1, behold thou art fair, my love. That's him talking to her. Behold thou art fair, meaning beautiful or pretty, not meaning you're just fair. You know, fair, mediocre and good and real good, something like that. Well, a woman wouldn't be very flattered to have her friend say, you're fair. And, you know, you're passable. Behold thou art fair, my love, thou art fair, thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Her eyes like his eyes. Verse, chapter 2, verse 1 and 2. He's likened to a lily of the valleys. She's likened to a lily among thorns. They're the same. The 1:15, thou art fair, my love, thou fair, thou hast dove's eyes. Christ has dove's eyes. Look at chapter 5, verse 12. Her eyes like his eyes. 5:12, his eyes are the eyes of doves. See that? So he says to her, thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Within thy locks mean the hair is across here and comes down across the eyes, like you see it. And the first one ever pulled out in Hollywood was somebody named Veronica somebody, but I can't think of the name of it. Was that the name? Blake. Well, she was the first one to flop the hair down across the front of her face. She couldn't even see one eye. And then Lauren Bacall tried it after her. Now the hippies do it. And Teeny Tim does it, too, I guess. And now all the men do it. Not all of them, but all the hippies, you know. I've talked to butchers down there in the streets, you know. Honestly had the hair come clear down over here. You couldn't see the eye. And some of my boys give them a hard time, you know. Some of our more masculine men, you know. One of them got through when I'm asking for a date one. I don't know what that does to ego, but, you know, when you see a fella going that length, you know, like those hippies do, and then, you know what they're trying to do? They're trying to prove to men. See? That business of, mustache and all that, and that attempt to get all that growth there is an attempt to be masculine, you see. I don't want the world to bear some man's ego to have somebody, another man, you know, kid him like that, you know, or whistle at him like some of my fellas real crude about it, you know. And one of them, you're just kidding, you know, whistle at one of those fellas, and that fella reached in the front of his car and took out a 38, had a 38 of the front of the car and shook it at him. One of our boys had a big old monkey wrench and just shook it right back at him. And I don't know what that does to a man's ego, but I don't get the help if he is a man, yeah. That's he had dove's eyes within his locks. All right, thou art fair, my love, thou art fair, thou hast dove's eyes within my locks. Now, the application of that simply means that when you've been around Christ a long time, or if you're part of Christ and he's part of you, then your eyes ought to look like his. In other words, your eyes ought to see things like he sees them. And the Bible says the light of the body eye. The light of the body is the eye. So what's inside comes out. And when you spend a great deal of time with the Lord Jesus Christ, then your eyes ought to match his. Then I don't ought to see things the way he sees them, but they ought to look at things the way he looks at them, and they ought to look at the things he looks at, not look at the things he care not to look at. 4:1, thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is as a flock of goats. Well, you don't get the similitude if you're European. I mean, if one of American boys said to American girl, you got hair like a flock of goats. Like that guy was courting his girl, you know, and bragging about it, and he got mixed up, and he said what beautiful red eyes and blue lips you have. And go with the well. They said, oh, loosen up this morning. You're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. Just the other day, sun comes up, sun goes down. And if he said, you know, like a flock of goats, he'd think, well, what is that? You know, flea bitten or mangy or eating tin cans or what? And, but the thing is, goats over there are goats of Kedar with black hair, the black goats. And when he says a flock of goats, he means like you look up on a hillside, off there, say, 4 or 5 miles, and it's just black. It's a smooth, rippling, dark mass of goats coming down the hill. He's dark-complexed. Dark-complexed, and so is he. Look at Song of Solomon, chapter 5, verse 11. Speaking of his hair, Song of Solomon 5:11, his head is as the most fine gold, his locks are bushy and black as a raven. And the thing about that thing is that, again, the bride of Christ should match him. The hair is a covering. Bible said hair is given to woman a covering for her head. So the covering of a Christian is Christ. And about that in Ephesians chapter 6, put on the helmet of salvation, that's the head covering. So the head covering should be like his. And the bride should match him in those ways because, well, that thing works. It works together with married couples. You ever seen two people that lived together for 40 or 50 years? When two people live together 40, 50 years, they rub off on each other. And sometimes it's less than that, in 10 or 15 years. And they pick up the same expressions, the same tones, and sometimes and same habits, and sometimes even the same facial qualities. I've seen photographs of couples that married back in 1920 and 1910, and seen the pictures, and you never saw two more different-looking individuals in all your life. And when I talked to these people, and they were, well up in age, I mean, up in around 70 someplace, and you could not tell them apart. And the moral there for the Christian is the Christian should have fellowship with Christ so he begins to match Christ in appearance. There's something about every Christian ought to be Christ-like. Now, maybe a lot of this isn't Christ-like at all. I mean, we're sinners. But there ought to be something about you that reminds people of Jesus Christ. And if nothing about you that reminds people of Jesus Christ, you haven't spent a whole lot of time with him. There'll be some, it ought to rub off somewhere. All right, 4:1, thou hast dove's eyes, and in thy locks thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Mount Gilead. That's the pasture land east of Jordan. And Mount Gilead is where Jacob made the covenant with Laban. Thy teeth, now he's bragging about her physical characteristics. And, of course, any woman likes to be bragged about and told she's beautiful and likes to be raised about, made a lot of, and even the ugly ones do. And women are peculiar, and they never get tired of hearing that, no matter how old they are, what they look like. And I never been able to understand. I don't think just a man can ever understand it. But you take a fellow 75 years old, he's a woman 70 years old. You know, he can pat in the back while she's cooking a meal and say, honey, you're the prettiest woman in all the world. You know, she giggles. And she knows he's lying. But that's one kind of lie women seem to appreciate. And I don't know why that is. I don't understand that at all. I don't know. I never particularly appreciated people lying to me. But just the ladies are different. And so he's bragging about it, and that's where it ought to be. I mean, I was talking one time, I was talking out to West Florida University to a class out there. They asked me to come out there and talk to on the problems of young married couples. And I went out there and talked to them, got going pretty good, went an hour and a half, and they didn't want to quit when it got over. And one young lady got crying. She kept bawling like a baby, and, well, the color lady, she didn't take to it too well. She wanted to. She was interested in premarital sex. You know, she was. Well, no, I wasn't proper in this and that. And I got talking to those people, and one fellow said, he raised his hand, and I kind of stirred him up, and he said, "What you mean what you just said?" I said, "Sure, I mean what I just said." And he said, "Well, do you mean to tell me that you have to talk about a woman like that all her life?" I said, "Yeah, man, if you ain't prepared to brag about him all your life, don't marry him." And he said, "What are you going to do when you get around 60 or 70? I said, "Keep bragging, man. Keep bragging." 4:2. Thy teeth are like a flock of sheep that are shorn, white, which come up from washing, clean. That'd be a good Ipan of toothpaste ad, or Pepsin or something. Whereas every one bear twins, teeth match. And Americans, they don't think much about that. They never think about bragging about a woman's hair or eyes or teeth. I mean, Americans, you know, about half nigger, the way to look at things. I mean, you know, unsaved Americans. That's right. Most Americans, the average American unsaved man, looks at a woman's form. See? Anybody knows that. They never think, look at her teeth, they think, look at her eyes, her hair. And so you see a thing like that, where he's bragging about a woman's teeth, American, oh, you know, what's that, you know? We're Americans at car. We're about half nigger, you know, when it comes to looking at things like that. That's right. Amen? Amen, that's right. If you don't know that, you just haven't got good sense. You're lying, one. You can take a newspaper, take this morning newspaper, and you open that thing up, look at the movie ad, and you know perfectly well I'm telling the truth. And so they don't often think about things like that, but that's, even advertisers recognize that that's one of the main things about, one of the main things that makes the woman beautiful is her teeth. And many movie stars had all her teeth pulled and bought their plate because they were better looking. That's one thing I'm going to let you know about, so I'll let you know about it ahead of time. You know, when you see one of those ads, you know, where, you know, and one person got in a car, you know, on an icebox, and whether a smile, sometimes you see the most perfectly matched teeth you ever saw. You say, how do they get teeth like that? They buy them. That's right. And so he's bragging teeth. All right, two, thy teeth are like a flock of sheep that are even shorn that come up from the washing, whereas every one bear twins and none is barren among them. No teeth missing. Of course, that's in some islands, South Sea Islands, that's considered a sign of beauty when a woman has a couple of teeth missing. And there's one island over there, I forget the name of the tribe, but one island over there where a man won't marry a woman if she has one of her front teeth missing. So that's considered kind of a sign of beauty, you know. That's why I have a gaping hole there in front of the face. And, you know, every year-round mating season, or mating time, you know what the women do? They get rocks and bust out the front teeth. I mean, every year around, you know, spring comes, you know, you hear the sound of smashing the rocks and spit blood up over the island. And I tell you, brother, you got to have convictions to do that. Whereof every one bear twins, and none is bare, and no teeth missing, and all of them match. Thy lips are like a thread of scarlet, thin lips, and scarlet like red, although undoubtedly natural color, and make up as such over in the Orient, up until the time of Christ, or even much later, was restricted largely to prostitutes. As a matter of fact, it was largely that way almost anywhere. And that thing came to America mainly from France after 1918. Whenever Americans go overseas and pick up habits of other countries, they bring them back with them. And the only kind of people that wore makeup all the time, everybody, were French people. Not even Italians or Spaniards. And never Germans and rarely Englishmen. That's the French situation. And they brought that back after 1918. You can take look through books of pictures and drawings and things and photographs from 1890 and 1900, 1910, 1920, you'll find very little of it. And they depend in those days, a woman depended upon color largely, she was dependent upon her health. Now, you get in the ballroom crowd around 1900 and 1890 and 1870, the ballroom crowd, and they used to wear makeup a good bit. But then again, that's largely because the kind of people in Europe who spent all time in ballrooms and drawing rooms were sickly people. And the original cure for good complexion is staying outdoors. Now, I'm not going to preach you ladies about makeup, you know. I'm not going to say, well, now you wear makeup, that's the devil, you know, if you wear. You know, we're not going to make the mistake of paying more attention outside than inside. Yeah. But what I'm saying here in the passage is probably natural. A woman back in 1850 and 1860, if you're any kind of woman at all, was working in a scrub board outdoors and a kettle outdoors, and kicking 15 kids around the house, including the boys, with a belt and a hoe handle, and she's in good health, brother. I mean, she, her lips were red and her cheeks were pink, but that would lodge you through good circulation. All right, three, thy lips are like a thread of scarlet, and thy speech is comely. It matches. The speech matches the lips. It's healthful. Thy speech is comely, it's proper. Thy temples are like a piece of pomegranate within my locks, a sweet fruit, and much desired. Thy neck is like the Tower of David, builded for an armory, wherein there hang a thousand bucklers or shields of mighty men. Doesn't sound like very flattering for a woman. Sound like a description of a German woman, you know, Berthold or Brunhild or somebody. Thy neck is like a Tower of David. You know, it says a person's thick neck. Well, it isn't very graceful for a woman to have a thick neck.
I don't guess.
I've seen some that were so skinny, they looked like a chicken, you know, or having a on a starvation ration. The modern idea of a woman, anyway, you know, is not what it used to be. Modern idea of a woman, did you ever compare Venus de Milo with, the Varga girl, the Petty girl, some of those pictures? The idea of an average woman today that's a beautiful woman is a woman that's about 25 pounds underweight. And ladies all worry about being getting fat and getting overweight, and some of them just skin down to this thin as a scarecrow, just sickly. So because of that, most professional models are 25 pounds underweight. Because it adds the weight and pound comes on. And did you ever see a bunch of professional models in an airport or a train station going through to someplace? I've seen strings of them, you know. Trying to down the country, get through Dallas and New York and Chicago and Washington, up and down. And you see, I've seen movie stars, you know, come through there and strings of models and Miss America, Miss Universe contest, all loading on the plane and all this and that. And you never saw a more sickly bunch of people in all your life. I mean, and all of them looked like they were dressed up to form a stage of a burlesque show. You talk about sick looking. And little old skinny necks, little old spindly legs like a bunch of chickens. And blue, you know, big blue eyes. You got this bright blue, you know. Flat back, you can't tell you looking at an owl. What in the world are you looking at? And you know why they dress like that? Because it photographs good. So you take that thing in front of a camera and you photograph that thing, it looks real good. It don't look any good. In real life, it doesn't look any good. Looks like somebody had got out of a sideshow someplace. Four, thy neck is like the Tower of David, builded for an armory, and that is strength. Whereon, and the tower, the shields are hung on the tower, whereon may hang a thousand bucklers, all shields of mighty men. The Tower of David was an armory, and in the armory they hung up their shields and bucklers. And the buckler is the harness. That is, the buckler is not just the buckle, but the buckler, the harness, and the belt, and shoulder straps that holds up the whole gear. And then the shield. And in a modern armory, what you have is a rifle rack. And all the rifles are laid out in a rack, and then when you get in a line, you run around and take your rack out of the rack. And in this thing here, they hang along the wall, and when the men go out to battle, they tear by and grab the sword and shield off the wall. So that's an armory back in these days. Thy neck is like the Tower of David, builded for an armory, wherein there hang a thousand bucklers, all shields of mighty men. Thy two breasts are like two young roes that are twins, which feed among the lilies. Word here is a female heart. Like twins that match, which feed among the lilies. I can't get the similitude. Until the day breaks, second coming, and shadows flee away, tribulation. I will get me to the mountain of myrrh, to the hill of frankincense. Reference to Christ, as in Psalm 45 and verse 6. Perfume with myrrh and frankincense. I will get me to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. Thou art all fair, my love. There is no spot in thee. Then that's the marriage. Come to Ephesians 5 and notice that that's the condition of the bride of Christ after the judgment seat of Christ. Ephesians 5. Verse 25, Ephesians 5:25. That's a picture of the church after the judgment seat of Christ, and there's no spot in her. We sing a song, there's a glorious church without spot or wrinkle, washed in the blood of the Lamb. But that isn't too true, see? It's a glorious church that's going to be without spot or wrinkle. But it's not without spot or wrinkle now. Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives, as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So the church isn't spotless and wrinkleless and blemishless until the judgment seat of Christ. Song of Solomon 4:7. Thou art all fair, my love, completely cleansed, completely clean. Not just, now I know at the rapture you're going to get a new body, but this means the church is not just a body of sick people that are sinless. This means that all the work connected with that body have been purified, purged, and burned up and ironed out. To get spots out, you use a spot remover. And to get blemishes out, what is it? Oh, something rewoven and re-sewed? Is that a blemish in a garment? You re-sewed, don't you? And a wrinkle, you have to iron it out. So when you get the judgment seat of Christ, there's going to be three kind of things going on. One is the linen righteousness, which you have. Revelation 19 is going to have to be re-stitched to fit you. And then there's going to have to be some spot remover applied to get rid of the spots. And there's going to have to be some things ironed out. And the dispute between God's people that are ironed out here has to be ironed out up there. So he said, without spot or wrinkle. Song of Solomon chapter 4, verse 8, come with me, him talking to her. Come with me from Lebanon, north end of Israel. My spouse, his wife, with me from Lebanon, look from the top of a manna. A manna, word means a settled provision. It's the name of the deep freeze they sell. Look from the top of a manna, from the top of a settled provision. That's a picture. The marriage is verse 7, and after verse 7 he says, come up here and look. So he takes the bride up on top of a hill where she can look down and see. And come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, come with me from Lebanon, from the top of a manna, a settled provision. Lord, provide everything. From the top of Shinar and Hermon. Now all that stuff's in North Palestine. Lebanon is North Palestine, Amana is in North Palestine, Shinar is in North Palestine, and Hermon is in North Palestine. Now, you remember back there in the back room when I was trying to teach, I had a chart over there in the wall. You remember that chart that showed the tabernacle and the land of Palestine and the great deep and the city of Jerusalem all lined up together from the far end? Did you notice how I drew a picture of the map of the land of Palestine there and put it in the same place? The reason why I did is because the north end of Palestine is above a body of water northward. You've got the Sea of Galilee here and the Dead Sea here. Two bodies of water with a firmament between them. And at the rapture, the Lord is said to be in Hermon, Mount Shinar, a manna above the second bunch of water, there. Therefore, the universe is water here, and a firm between, and the Lord is there. In other words, the reason why God picked the land of Palestine instead of Asia, Africa, Europe, is because it matches the universe. All right, so Song of Solomon 4:8, come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, with me, Lebanon. Look from the top of Amana in English, Amana in Hebrew, from Shinar and Hermon, from the lion's den. That's where the lion's going to come from. From the mountains of the leopards. Reference to Antichrist. And so the picture is that in the tribulation, the church is up there with Christ looking down on what takes place below. Come and look. And how the Lord does that, I don't know, but I'm sure if a man can do it with television, I don't know why the Lord can't do it. And, you know, men are so egotistical and so stupid, you know. They think they can take a man's face, you know, and photograph it and boil it down to a tube and push the thing off a couple hundred miles and flap it out in the air, you know, and sort of twist it down, pick the thing up and reassemble it in his living room. And they think God doesn't know what they're doing. I mean, if a man can do that, don't you know God's got some tricks up his sleeve? And men think, you know, they can take a man. My voice coming over here right now, going to those tapes back yonder. I die before the Lord comes, those things can play 20, 25 years after I'm dead. You hear all the word, all the breathing, you hear all the enunciation, you might even get some of the spit.
to the microphone, and you hear all this congregation shifting and moving and laughing and all that. Years later, a man can do that, and folks think, well, God doesn't have a record of what I'm saying, what I'm doing, what I'm thinking. Well, if man can do it, the Lord can do it. You say, well, you're just getting warm. Well, you think the Lord has a little more sense than man. I mean, if God is who he is and control 150 billion fishes, birds, and insects one time, why, he won't have any trouble picking up a few hundred million people. No problem. So he got it. And so when we get up there in heaven, the indication is the Lord will say, look, and you'll take up there and take a look down, you'll see what's going down on this earth in the tribulation. Folks often ask, they say, well, when a loved one dies, they say, my loved ones, they know what we're doing right now. You know, they always ask that. That's asked a lot. Father dies, a mother dies, they say, well, they see us, so they know what's going on. And there are some verses that indicate they could see. There are no verses that say they do. But there are some verses that indicate they could. And the verse that indicates that if the Lord wanted them to, it'd be no problem. Now, whether or not the Lord does let them do it now, I don't know. But the indications that that if he wanted them to, they could. And just how he does that, I don't know. But I wouldn't have any problem with it. Maybe when he come up, Lord in heaven, and said, I'm been kind of worried about my boy down there, don't wonder how he's doing, and Lord says, well, all right. There it is. And you get a camera from top, both sides, and bottom middle at a distance of 3 feet, 20 feet, and 100 feet, simultaneous at one time. So I don't know how the thing goes. I don't know if it's got more sense than man's got. Yeah.